Pelota al frente para Beardsley. Se apoya Beardsley en Glenn Hoddle. Y Hoddle da un pase equivocado a Argentina. De inmediato busca la salida. Y la salida de Argentina se ve más clara porque combina la habilidad de los jugadores, como en este caso Diego Armando Maradona, que cambia la velocidad. Va al pique al frente, tiene a Gurruchaga, se mete al área, manda sobre Pirel, siento, tira gol. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo! ¡Portentoso! ¡Bien bonito, bien fabricado!
Nederland gaat in de halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
Marcatore di Cannavaro. Palla tagliata. Messa fuori. C'è Pirlo. 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 Ancora Pirlo. Di Tecco. Tiro. Gol.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast special. I am Tom Miller. He is Ken Lee. We are normally Ken of the Three Beards EPL podcast, but it's a World Cup year, Ken. I can't help myself.
It's the greatest show on earth. It only happens every 4 years.
Yeah, it's the greatest show on earth, and it's not even close.
Can I say that, probably? I think T.P. Barnum kind of probably coined that, but...
I'm pretty sure they're out of business. I don't think circuses exist anymore. I saw one that was supposed to come in town, but there's no elephants, no tigers, there's like nothing. I don't think that exists anymore. But anyway, Ken, obviously the World Cup, billions watching.
Yeah, the billions. Entire world.
International implications. I mean, I was thinking about how we should do this show, and I kind of was thinking, you know, we're going to do the overview, we're going to do Group A today, we'll do a little intro, and then throughout the next few weeks, we'll do Group B, C, D, etc., all the way up until kickoff, and then we'll cover the games as well. But I was thinking, Ken, like, everybody has something that the World Cup brings out, you know, something you can associate it with. I know what mine is, and I think about it a lot, about the traveling that I've done and the places I've been and what it means to the people in those countries, and all over the world, really, when everybody stops and watches the World Cup. But Ken Lee, what does it mean to you?
World Cup?
Yeah, man.
Well, first off, it's just an extension of soccer into the summer months, which doesn't happen that often, so... It is, in that aspect, the greatest thing going in summer, for sure. Two, usually it is a sense of American pride in a sport that is greatly disrespected in this country. And that is where I'm a little salty for the 2018 World Cup. I don't want to say that I'm not looking forward to it at all, but I'm not looking forward to it as much, if I'm being completely honest. We've got no dog in the fight, as they say. I'm going to watch just because I love it, and it is the greatest thing in the world, sporting-wise. I don't know of anything else that brings the world together for three and a half weeks the way the World Cup does. But, I'm a little sad that the U.S. isn't in there. So, you know, as we've been saying on our Premier League podcast, if you listen, well, we're English fans this summer, mate.
We are, Ken, and there's a lot to talk about. I kind of disagree. I agree with the fact that we're going to take a little hit. Not having a dog in the fight, to me, is one of those things where you lose out on the camaraderie of the whole office, people that don't care about soccer, watching it, you know, during lunch.
Yeah, it'll just be us talking to each other over the phone, which we do anyway in the week. There's no one...
Yeah.
There's no way to just talk to someone, you're right, like at the water cooler about it, because no one's going to be watching in America. Yeah. Like, only fans of the sport.
Yeah. But that's the good news, Ken, because we are fans of the sport, and we will be able to draw out all of the excitement that it has to offer. And the one thing that I think about when I, you know, with the U.S. not being in it, I think about not who we can have as our replacement, but all the different narratives that come into play and just make it the greatest spectacle and easily the best thing that you can be watching every 4 years, even if you don't have a team in the fight.
That's the way I feel. Yeah,
like we have so much going on. Yeah, we have billions of people watching. There's international implications. Ken, these are my favorite rivalries: Brazil, Argentina, Egypt, Algeria. Algeria is not in it, but these matches between Egypt and Algeria are just a representation of how football can kind of be in the very center of everybody else's life. The whole world will shut down for it. I have been in Germany during the World Cup. I've been in Spain during the World Cup. And I can tell you, Ken, that these places, when their teams are on and even when they're not, they completely shut down. You know, with the Dutch versus Germany, again, the Dutch aren't in it either. But in Germany, you know, they paint all the oranges in Germany. They paint them black when they're going to play Holland.
That's
something
awesome.
That you can't find.
That's what the sport does.
You can't find that anywhere else. At the same time, it can supersede politics. You know, the Iran versus U.S. game, that was one of those times where there was a lot of tension between Iran and the U.S. and the players. It didn't come out on the field. You know, the players were playing together on the field and not really bringing that kind of tenacity, that kind of like hatred that the two countries were feeling. They went and played soccer instead, Ken. And that's true of West Germany versus East Germany in 1974, North Korea versus anyone. I mean, you have these countries that normally probably can't even sit together to have a cup of tea, Ken, or a beer, and all of a sudden they're on the same field playing in the most emotionally charged event in the world.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just on the field. I mean, what's happening in the stands? I mean, it's a whole show of just what sport does, the dynamic, the impact it has on just people. At the end of the day, we're all the same. We love watching our sport. We love watching our club or country play. And that's what the World Cup is. Yeah. That's why everyone tunes in every 4 years. Everyone. Everyone's a soccer fan every fourth year.
Yeah, and you know what, Ken? Like, we're going to talk a lot about these teams, each individually, and some of the drama that has unfolded over the years that no one will ever forget, even if they're not soccer fans. Everybody in the world of sport knows when Zidane, you know, when Zidane's headbutt. No one will ever forget that. Baggio going over the bar, he missed a PK, and for the rest of his life, if you miss a PK in a co-ed soccer match, you're a Baggio. And really, you know, Baggio is one of the best players in history, but that's what he's remembered for, which is completely unfair. And then, Ken, you have stuff like you get a stupid red card in a match, like David Beckham, Ken, in a World Cup match in 98, received death threats for years for getting a red card that should have been a yellow.
Right.
You know, like these things, and they stick to you forever. You can get injured in a World Cup. Like if your big player gets injured and you get knocked out in the first round, that's no one cares about the injury. You're just out.
Yep.
That's it. Like there's no excuses. At the same time, you have players like, you know, Ronaldo. Remember the pressure of the 1998 World Cup final, Ken? You know, everybody said after he played in it that the pressure had gotten to him, and it turns out years later, like 15 years later, Ken, 20 years later, people were finally finding out that he had had a seizure the night before due to something unrelated, and that he wasn't able to play. They stuck him out on the field after he went to the hospital. That's why he didn't play well, but it stuck with him. You know, like he had to carry it around. A player like Ronaldo, who's one of the best in the entire world in the history of the game, getting boos because of that. Like that to me, it just encompasses the pressure cooker that is the World Cup, the drama that can come. You can be a villain to a country for eternity, Ken. You think about all the players who go in for hard tackles. We don't forget about the red cards against Italy. You know, we don't forget about Michael Ballack's handball on the line in the U.S. game in 2002.
Never.
You know, like, that's another part of what makes the romance of the World Cup just draws me in, Ken. I'm really, really looking forward to this one.
No, it's going
to
be great.
A lot of different directions we can go in.
I mean,
it's in Russia.
I mean, Russia in and of itself. I mean, that's a story, talking point.
It is. We can start there, Ken. Russia in Group A, 40-1 odds. That's really surprising to me. But the reason that their odds aren't farther out, like you look at some of these other teams, Egypt's 250-1, Russia being 40-1 is because they're hosts, Ken.
Sure. I mean, I guess anything
host
can
means
happen.
Everything. Yeah, there's only one host that hasn't made it out of the knockout stages, and that was South Africa in 2010. The rest of them, I think there's six of them that have won the actual competition, including England, Ken, which would probably be our team for the year.
England World don't Cup really champions have a choice. 2018.
Yep. You heard it here first. You heard it here first, Ken. You heard it here first. But okay, Ken, so you started the conversation with Russia. We'll talk about their manager and their players, etc., but let's get into the narrative of it. A lot of the controversy surrounding FIFA over the last few years, especially the last 5 years, has been about Qatar and Russia buying a World Cup. How do you feel about it being in Russia right now? And do you think that the politics that are so prevalent in Russia can have any effect on matches or anything like that?
Effect on matches? Are you talking like match fixing, Thomas?
Not necessarily match fixing, but do you remember in Brazil when Brazil had that game where they were playing against Croatia and the people outside in Brazil were going berserk? They weren't rioting, but they were very upset that the country decided to spend so much money on the World Cup, and the country's just a little bit unsettled. And you could argue that the referee, who I believe was Japanese in the match, felt the pressure because Brazil wasn't playing especially well, and he awarded them a PK. And a lot of people were saying that the ref was accused of bias towards the host because FIFA had sent out a mandate just basically saying, you know, we got to be careful with people. If Brazil gets knocked out in the first round, there could be riots or something like that. Do you think that'll have any kind of any Russian influence that people are always so afraid of? Think that'll have anything to do with this?
I mean, I doubt it. I don't think so. I think that Russia, I think they have their heads somewhere else other than, I think, a World Cup. I think that they've got a bigger fish to fry.
I agree.
I hope not. I hope nothing happens. I want to keep the beautiful, clean game that is our sport clean and beautiful. But when you have it in a country like this where there's already a lot of animosity going in, yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, there's always going to be something to worry about. I would say, I mean, we're going to go in, we'll wait until the group discussion, but
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I think not. I think not. I hope not. I definitely think so, but I hope
not. I don't think it will be. I think there's a narrative that people will try to write about that, and I really don't think it will have much to
do with the actual
matches.
Well, it'll be like anything else. If the World Cup, for whatever reason, is not exciting, the group stage isn't exciting, then yeah, there'll be a news outlet that throws something out like, this is Russia's fault. What's Russia doing? What's the World Cup doing? Was this part of the plan?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, they have to have news. So hopefully the news is on the field, not in the host nation.
Well, it's one of the things about the World Cup, though, Ken, is all these nations are still vying for supremacy. It's just in a different way. You know, that Russia wants to show the world that they can host this event. And that's why I think it'll go off without a hitch. Because Russia will be actually more leaning towards being a convivial host than trying to win the World Cup.
I don't think they're
going
to use the World Cup to push any agenda they may or may not have. That's for sure. I think to your point, they'll be wanting to be the good host, handing everybody, you know, a glass of champagne when they walk in, making sure that the place is clean, the carpet's vacuumed, you know, this, that, and the third. I mean, I think it's going to be... I think it'll be just fine.
I agree. And I've been to Russia, really enjoyed it. Even
like
as a younger child,
Thomas,
I just don't
really
speak
everywhere.
Any Russian. You know, this brings it all out. It really does when we're talking about the World Cup in these countries. I haven't been to that many countries, Ken, but it seems like my dad, when we were traveling, was aiming for World Cup countries. I think that's what it is. But anyway, so Russia, 40-1 odds. They are the hosts, so Ken, they are the automatic qualifiers, and probably because of that, they're actually the lowest ranked FIFA team in the competition. Which I don't put much in the FIFA rankings, Ken. But okay. I do put some stake in the actual betting odds.
Much, I think, and me and you have had this conversation before, but you can't put much weight into anything internationally except for the fact that it is the greatest sporting event on earth, the World Cup. But let's really think about it before we dive into the World Cup. What we are expecting, what this is going to definitely do is increase transfers throughout Europe.
Sure.
It's going to push someone's career up. It's going to push someone's career down.
That's true.
All on the scope of 3.5 weeks of playing, unless you're Germany and Spain, playing with 10 guys you've maybe never even met before. I just don't think we can hold too much into rankings and the actual display of nations. And I think that that's why the World Cup is so cool, because outside of Spain and Germany, who the national team play on in Germany, one club team in the country, and on Spain and on two club teams in mm-hmm. the country for the vast majority of it, anything can really mm-hmm. happen. And like, does it happen like that often? Not usually, but it could. You could have one of these like Mo Salah from Egypt just being enough to push enough further to make just a run. Or Russia, a host nation. They've got a couple of quality players. They can make a good run. That's where the storyline comes from. I think that we do put a little bit too much emphasis on how players play internationally. And I think that there is some stock to be held or purchased, you might say, or put into a world-class player who doesn't show up for their nation. But again, they only play with these guys 2 or 3 times a year. Outside of, you know, and most of those are friendlies or qualifications coming into it. So, I mean, yeah, let's bring Leo Messi. He's traditionally terrible for his nation.
Well, he's not terrible.
Just recently he started showing up.
Carried them in qualifying. But, you know, and he took him to a final last time. But, you know, he has 0 teammates on Argentina.
Right, but that's why
he's
not really as
Barcelona.
Good as he is on 0. Barcelona for his club.
Yeah, they're all from different clubs, which I think makes a huge difference, exactly like you said, with Spain and Germany having so many players that are from the same clubs. But back to Russia, Ken, just the bare bones for Russia. Their manager is Stanislav Shirazov. My Russian isn't great, Ken, as I said before. Their best player, I would say, is Igor Akinfeev. You've actually seen him a lot. He's been in the Champions League every single year, really. And was rumored to Manchester United, rumored to Arsenal, Ken, your Arsenal, a while ago. It seems like those rumors have died down now that he's over 30 and has settled in at CSKA Moscow, where he's not going anywhere. His teammate, Alexander Golovin, is the player to watch for me. If they're going to go anywhere, they're going to need some attacking explosive tactics. They're going to need explosive moments, and I think Golovin is a player that can provide that. Ken, we talked about the narrative already, whether or not being a host would cause a problem for them off the field. And on the field, the host nations have always got a massive bump. I mean, a lot of teams, look at South Korea in 2002, Ken. They made it to the semifinals. You talk about getting a bump. Do you think Russia will get enough of a bump to get out of this group that includes Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Uruguay?
I think ordinarily I would just say yes, because you would imagine any other year that it would be Uruguay at the top, Russia second, and then you choose third or fourth between Saudi Arabia and Egypt. But with Egypt, there is a one Mo Salah. Is he enough? He might be enough to just push them in, and you have a fight for a second. I don't think that they've got enough. Anyone in this group has enough to beat Uruguay, but second, I think, is up for grabs with Mo Salah. He puts a little wrench in the plans, I think.
I agree. We can move right to Egypt then, Ken. I do want to mention with Russia, they do have their historic player of my choice was Lev Yashin. Played in the 58, 62, and 66 World Cup. The Black Octopus, Ken, was the only Ballon d'Or winner ever for a goalie. Brother Joey, you should know that by now. The history for Russia, 10 World Cups, 7 as the Soviet Union, and they placed 4th in 1966 behind that man, Lev Yashin. They have a decent chance, Ken, but like you said, it'd probably be second up for grabs, and if they're going to be up for grabs with Egypt, they have a edge because they are the host. Egypt, 250-1 in the betting pool if you want to bet on them to win it all. They qualified first in Africa, Group E. Ken, obviously they are led by Mo Salah, who is such a star in Egypt that he received 1 million write-in votes for the Egyptian presidential election. And he has to be the guy they have to look at. I was looking at their historic players. It's Mo Salah. He can be the guy that rewrites everything. They have a history of being in the World Cup only 5 times, and their highest finish was in the round of 16 in 1994. But Ken, if you have a guy like this that can dribble through a team in the box especially, you have a chance.
I personally think it will be Uruguay, Egypt, Russia, Saudi Arabia. Behind,
that's fair.
A couple Mo Salah goals at pivotal moments during this group stage.
Yeah, I mean, he has been so electric for Liverpool this season. I would say Ronaldo has been in a better form since January, but you'd have to say that Mo Salah for the whole entire year has probably been the most consistent electric threat, even above Messi, honestly, just in that he's providing a lot of offense and winning so many matches on his own. It's close to be, but to put him in those conversations, yeah, I think is fair. Yeah, so Egypt, their manager is Hector Cooper, spelled C-U-P-E-R, Ken. I don't know if that's pronounced Cooper or not. My pronunciations are, they're going to be pretty poor with these guys that are from countries that I am not familiar with. And their player to watch is Mo Salah. I mean, we have Mohamed Hassan, who's also an excellent player from Anderlecht. But really, for Egypt, they play a defensive style, and that's what they need to be playing because their overall talent pool isn't as deep as Uruguay and isn't as deep as some of the heavy hitters. So they're going to play defensive and have an electric counterattack. Obviously, Mo Salah will be a big part of that, and it'd be up to the midfield to feed them going forward, Ken. So anything else you want to add about Mo Salah and Egypt?
Yes. No, I think, Mo Salah, Egypt, player to watch, team to watch.
Yeah, I was doing the research, and that's what kind of put me down on Egypt, because I thought with Mo Salah, they could actually push forward. Salah had such a good year, but I worry because the Vegas odds makers do not believe Ken. 250-1 is one of the lowest odds in the actual.
Are these like odds to like make it out of the group or to win?
These are odds to win, which to me is a good way, but it's a good overall barometer of where the team is in the pool.
Sure, but
that's why I use betting odds instead of FIFA ranking.
You can make up.
Yeah, they can get out of the group. Yeah. They're going to be going up against Uruguay, Ken, who have one of the most impressive records in World Cup history. They're 40-1 odds, Ken. That's just actually the same as Russia. This is surprising. They qualified second in the nearly impossible CONMEBOL with Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, and Chile. All those teams playing there. It's a 10-team. It's a battle, Ken. That division, that conference, CONMEBOL is just unbelievable. So to get out of there in the first place is difficult, but to get out of there in a pretty comfortable second, you have to say that they are a team to watch and have been for years.
Strong country, strong players, all play major roles in their respective clubs. That's what makes them so tough. I think that they kind of came out of, but from like a passerby kind of thing, like it kind of came out of nowhere, it seems like. But I mean, they're kind of just like kind of ripe for it now. All their players are big name, and they're exciting to watch. I mean, they're fast, pass well, and they finish. They finish like crazy.
Yeah, we'll talk about their finishers real quick here. Ken, Luis Suarez on the team, obviously well known as a Barcelona striker, 50 international goals and 90 appearances. He's a player that can get the ball from anywhere on the field and go on one of those runs, especially against poor defenses. He's their biggest threat. And then side by side with him is Edinson Cavani, another player who's a top six top, maybe even top five striker in the world as a pure number nine. Suarez can set him up and score them, and Cavani can just score them. So as a team, Uruguay looks to attack, and really for them, it'll be their young midfield, which has players from Real, Juve, and Inter. It'll be their job to feed the superstars, Ken.
Yep, dynamic team.
Their history, Uruguay has won the World Cup twice, once in 1930 when they hosted the first ever World Cup, and 1950 they won. They've qualified 12 times out of 21 tournaments, and they've been in the semifinals five times and the finals twice, which is very impressive. For me, Ken, I was looking at historic players. Some of them go back so far that it's not even really worth throwing out there because nobody's ever seen them play. So I stuck with Diego Forlan. If you remember him, he had his five goals in 2010. But I really believe that this generation of Uruguay will be remembered as their golden generation. Luis Suarez, always a lightning rod, but probably their best player of all time. If there's another player, they played in another generation at a time when soccer was very, very different. And for me, Luis Suarez being on top of the number nine role for several years on Barcelona and Liverpool. And the only problem with Luis Suarez is, Ken, he bites a little bit. He bites.
It'll happen.
He's like my cat. Happen.
He'll do it again.
He bites. Yeah, so Suarez actually blocked a goal with his hands in 2010. Everybody remembers that one. He blocked it on the line, just full-out handball, received a red card, penalty kick goes wide, and they stayed in the tournament. And in 2014, he bit Chiellini of Italy on the back.
Yeah.
Ken, I don't understand. And he didn't receive any punishment until after the game when he was banned for 4 months, having freshly signed from Barcelona too, Ken. It was a really awkward situation because Barcelona was so excited to have him. They signed him for a bunch of money. And then they couldn't really introduce him because he bit a guy.
Yeah, I mean, that'll do it to you.
You bit a guy. Yeah, it's not a good way to start your first day of work, Ken. I know you would never do anything like that. It really wasn't. So be on the lookout for Luis Suarez. We also have the last team in the group, not necessarily in this order, Ken, but Saudi Arabia is 1,000-1. They qualified second in their group, which was not a very strong group. Their manager, Juan Antonio Pozza, formerly Chile manager that missed the World Cup. That's right, Ken. He was the Chile manager all the way through their qualifying. And that's the story with Saudi Arabia. They like to fire their coaches.
They're kind of just in disarray. They can't. It's not a priority for them, obviously, the way that they manage the coaching staff. I mean, this happens pretty frequently.
Yeah, no, actually what ended up happening, Ken, was their manager, Bert van Marwijk, led the team to the World Cup, like qualified completely, and then he was fired later and replaced by another manager who lasted 2 months and five friendlies before being fired. And then the ex-Chile manager, who had just been fired himself, Ken, for not qualifying for the World Cup, took over with a few weeks to spare. Basically this guy's had a few months to get to know his team and just dropped into the boiling pot, Ken. It's just not a good way to go into a big tournament like this. But like you said, it's indicative of a team that has their priorities are more with a political power struggle within their organization. And honestly, Ken, having done the research for the World Cup, this isn't the only country like that. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Nation's whole priority, it should start with football, then government. People.
Yeah. Ken, it's sad how many of these clubs, like, their managers make it into the World Cup, they qualify, and then they get fired because they disagree with the president of the whatever the nation's FA is.
Politics.
So.
You got to politic your way into this world.
Apparently, Ken. Saudi Arabia's best player, Nawaf Al Abed, and he plays for Al Hilal. Ken, you can look up some YouTube videos of him. He's electric as well, but I would say not a lot of people are going to know him, and not a lot of people are going to know really much about the Saudi Arabian team. The history, they've been to the World Cup five times. This is their fifth, and their highest finish, it was in the round of 16 in 1994. They have Sami Al-Jabir, who had 3 goals. Yeah. Sami Al-Jabir had 3 goals and has scored 12 years apart. Beyond that, Ken, I would say that Saudi Arabia, the goal for them is to keep it together. Yeah, keep it together, because when you're firing all your managers, I would say that, like you said, it's not a priority to finish competitively in the group. So and the odds reflect that at 1,000 to 1. All right, Ken. So that's Group A. Give me your rankings again, nice and clear.
Uruguay, Egypt.
Got it.
On the heels of Mosa, Russia, Saudi Arabia.
I'm sorry, Mohamed Salah. I'm going with Uruguay, Russia.
Oh, you give them the home field, Saudi Arabia. Advantage. I see that. Yeah. I just think that Mosa right now is he's a little much to handle, and I think he's got enough to push those guys around a little bit, and it could come down to one of these things where, like, depending on what happens in the group, a point against Russia could be enough for Egypt. You never know. I mean, that's why the group stage is so exciting.
That's fair. All right, Ken, before we go, I want to get your favorite World Cup moment, and that includes any games you've ever watched. I know for me, it's pretty simple. It was watching Ronaldo in 2002, Brazilian Ronaldo, after his 98 World Cup final, where he was the best player in the world and something happened to him before the France final and ended up losing. Watching Brazilian Ronaldo come back in 2002 and reach the top of the game again after a horrific injury, that's definitely up there for me, especially the way he played in that World Cup was absolutely unbelievable. And it was what probably started me down the path of really becoming obsessed with soccer.
Oh, yeah?
Now it's your turn, Ken. Now it's your turn.
I would say and I don't like this player. I mean, I've spoken about him a lot, but I'm going to go with a U.S. moment because I feel like the World Cup makes you feel, as a soccer fan, super, super American and very, very, like, for your country. And it's final stages of the game. Tim Howard, 2010 World Cup, we're playing Algeria. He punts the ball up the field to a streaming, sprinting Landon Donovan, who just slots the ball past the keeper, slides into the corner flag. Me personally, I never felt more American watching a soccer game than in that moment. I'll never forget that. And it pains me to even say that because I can't stand Landon Donovan. But it was so awesome to see that.
Yeah, I was trying to stay away from the U.S., Ken, because, you know, heartbroken.
Hey, yeah, it's no, times like these where we only terrific, have the memories know, right now. Clint Dempsey scores a goal in 29 seconds against Ghana in the last World Cup. I mean, we've had some good moments.
Yeah, the U.S. is actually a pretty solid tournament team, considering their usual ranking. They almost always make it out of the group stages.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you really, really can't complain, except you can when they don't even qualify when... Still excited, Ken. Still really excited about this. We will be back for Group B in the next few days. Look for these episodes every 3 or 4 days. That's pretty much it for me. For Ken Lee, I am Tom Miller, signing off the Three Beards World Cup podcast. We hope to hear you guys again soon and hope everybody has an awesome week.